Good morning.
This is a State of Idaho, David Ray Cruz, docket number 47801. Here on behalf of Mr. Cruz is Sally Cooley. Here on behalf of the state is Kim Jorgensen. This is the time set for argument. Ms. Cooley, are you ready to go forward?
Yes, Your Honor.
Go ahead, please.
May it please the court, counsel. David Cruz appeals after a jury found him guilty of misdemeanor domestic battery, felony domestic battery, and he pled guilty to the persistent violator sentencing enhancement. Mr. Cruz was sentenced to 20 years with 10 years fixed. On appeal, he asserted that the district court erred by refusing to give his requested necessity jury instruction, that the prosecutor committed misconduct, and that the district court abused its sentencing discretion. Mr. Cruz, unless this court has specific questions regarding the prosecutorial misconduct, today I intend to focus on the jury instruction and sentencing issues. Now, Mr. Cruz, his fiance, Danielle Hume, and one of Mr. Cruz's friends drank alcohol at some of the restaurants in Boise pretty much all day long. Ms. Hume drank with the two men and drove all three of them around Boise. Multiple times throughout the day, Mr. Cruz offered to call and pay for an Uber so that Ms. Hume was not drinking and or driving while drinking. Ms. Hume refused and kept drinking and driving. They ended up at Ms. Hume's townhome where they had dinner. After dinner, Mr. Cruz and Ms. Hume began arguing. The argument turned physical, and each person testified the other instigated physical contact, with Ms. Hume claiming Mr. Cruz put his hands around her neck, and Mr. Cruz claiming Ms. Hume smacked him in the face and tried to again. Now, after the physical part of this, Ms. Hume grabbed the car keys and left the apartment, telling Mr. Cruz, "I don't care about you and your stupid job," seemingly saying she did not care if she wrecked the car. Now, Mr. Cruz went after Ms. Hume when she ran out of the apartment. She ran into a common area that was a grassy space common to all of the townhomes, kind of behind the buildings. He tried to persuade her to come back into the townhome. He used words, and eventually he picked her up and carried her back to the townhome area. Ms. Hume testified that she was trying to get away from Mr. Cruz, and she kicked and screamed and yelled for help once he started carrying her. Now, Mr. Cruz testified that he did touch and carry Ms. Hume, and she yelled for him to stop. However, he testified that he believed his actions were necessary. He testified he touched her because he thought she's going to wreck that car, she's going to get in trouble and get a DUI. He was trying to stop Ms. Hume from wrecking the car, injuring herself, and injuring another person. Now, 2 months before trial, Mr. Cruz requested a necessity jury.
Ms. Cooley, could I interrupt you there? You just said that Mr. Cruz was concerned about Ms. Hume injuring somebody else. Can you point me to a place in the record or transcript where those are the fears that he is concerned about?
Well, I think that those specific words are not mentioned by Mr. Cruz in his testimony, but I think that's implicit in the get in trouble or wreck the car. You know, there's always a risk of someone who is driving drunk injuring another person in addition to themselves, injuring another driver or injuring another pedestrian. But Your Honor is correct. It is not specifically stated in the record that he feared she was going to injure another person.
So is it correct? Am I correct in understanding that the concerns that Mr. Cruz articulated were the three that you just mentioned, that she would wreck the car, that she would get in trouble, or that she might get a DUI?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe so. I think those are the three concerns, that she would be in trouble with the law, getting a DUI, or wrecking the car. But I do think that inherent in wrecking the car would also be a concern that she would injure herself in wrecking the car. But that was not stated.
And are there any other dangers or concerns that you would like this court to look at in this case?
Well, Your Honor, I do think that, you know, the courts have spoken about the dangers of DUI and drunk driving generally. You know, the Idaho Supreme Court has talked about that at length in various cases, and that is why when someone is arrested for DUI, you know, the police officers don't wait for that person to get into an accident and cause an accident. They arrest someone preemptively, well, because they're drinking and driving, because it is such a dangerous activity. And so I would like this court to consider a DUI and the things that come with the DUI, the things that are at risk and the dangers of the DUI, in addition to the actual stated reasons for, you know, wrecking the car, getting in trouble, getting a DUI. So in addition to the actual legal charges, what comes with a DUI and the dangerousness of drinking and driving.
Was the attendant circumstances to a DUI argued to the lower court, to the trial court?
Your Honor, several times counsel and, well, Mr. Cruz did testify about what his concerns were. And to the lower court, Mr. Smethers, I believe, did argue that there was the dangers of the DUI, her getting a DUI, wrecking the car, and getting in trouble. And so I think this is preserved below, these specific objections. And I think this court can consider that a DUI is not just a legal charge or a crime. A DUI also brings its own risks, as the Idaho Supreme Court and this court have recognized.
And assuming or understanding that you'd like us to look at all of the attendant circumstances of a DUI, are these three the only category of concerns that we should address on appeal? These three concerns that Mr. Cruz testified about.
And any arguments that defense counsel made below to the district court or that the district court discussed with counsel in ruling on this, yes.
And what were those, Ms. Cooley?
Your Honor, counsel did argue, let me try and find the precise words. So on page 477 of the transcript, counsel asserted was justified by the fact that he was stopping her from driving drunk and potentially destroying the vehicle, which also impacted his livelihood. And so I guess, you know, Your Honor, I did not explain in detail about the livelihood and the connection to the car. In this case, Mr. Cruz was also concerned about the car. He worked for a car dealership and had put a dealer plate on this car, and Ms. Hume was test driving the car. So he also had a concern about that. I think there was some concern that he would be in trouble at work, potentially lose his job, that kind of thing, if she did have an accident in that car.
But didn't counsel concede in the trial court on the transcript, page 482, when he talked about those two issues, when the court declined to give the general necessity instruction and said, isn't the battery really covered by the other instructions, the self-defense and retreat and the use of force? And Cruz said, yes, arguably, Your Honor.
Your Honor, I don't see him saying arguably as meaning he is conceding the issue. I said, I can see him saying arguably as we use in our briefing where we say arguably. And I think that's for the sake of the argument that perhaps this some of this could be covered. But I think he still wished to preserve the objection. And I think the court recognized that on page 500 of the transcript, the district court handed out the jury instructions. And then at the bottom of this page, lines 18. So I took the ICJI 1512, which was the necessity instruction requested by Mr. Cruz, which was a necessity instruction, so that's been deleted. I know that the defendant objected to that and the objection is of record. And so everyone was preserving this issue. Mr. Smethers, I think, was just recognizing that the court wished to disagree with him, and arguably that's what the court was saying.
Thank you.
Now, as this court has pointed out,
I actually have two questions for you. One is, I think your opening comments, and I think this is consistent with your brief, talked about Mr. Cruz having concerns earlier in the day about Ms. News driving and had offered to call an Uber because he was under the influence. So is there anything in the record that would reveal why the it became a necessity to batter her later in the day to keep her from driving?
Your Honor, I do not know if there is information in the record other than the fact that she had continued drinking. Both parties testified that she Well, Ms. Hume actually testified that she was intoxicated at the point when this battery occurred. I don't know that she testified that she was intoxicated all day, but I do know for certain that she testified she was intoxicated when this battery occurred. And the information in the record is such that she began drinking that morning. She testified to having a couple drinks right off the bat of double mimosas. They went to another establishment, had some more drinks. They went to Trader Joe's and purchased champagne for her and perhaps a bottle of white wine. She went to Walmart and she bought herself another bottle of champagne and began drinking it shortly before the incident. So I think that the record does show that she was intoxicated and she testified to that at the time this battery occurred. I don't recall her testifying that she was intoxicated leading up to it. So I think the record does reflect that she did drink throughout the day and found herself intoxicated at the time the battery occurred.
But Mr. Cruz thought an Uber was necessary earlier in the day and never called one. Is that also correct?
That is also correct. And you know, I would assume without knowing from the record that he was trying to prevent, her from drinking and driving, regardless of whether her blood alcohol content had passed above the 0.08 or whether she would be, impaired within the legal definition of the statute. I think he was acting preventatively before she reached that point, perhaps.
So, but he was aware of an alternative to a battery earlier in the day.
Your Honor, I just don't think it had reached the point, based on her testimony, that she was intoxicated at the point of the battery. We don't have a way to know how intoxicated she was prior to that point where she testified, "I was intoxicated."
And I apologize. I said I had two questions and I've already asked you more than two. I should have said I have two categories of questions. My second category is a lot of the argument centered around Mr. Cruz's belief regarding the necessity of his actions. And I'm just wondering, what is your position on which element his subjective beliefs are relevant to in relation to the necessity defense?
Well, Your Honor, it's a examination of, when a jury instruction is requested, if a reasonable view of the evidence supports the requested instruction, then the instruction should be given. And in this case, even when there's conflicting evidence, and we know that from State v. Hastings, that it's still a question for the jury, and the jury needed to have this instruction in front of it. A defendant is entitled to have his legal theory of defense. And so while most of this was from Mr. Cruz's testimony, the jury is entitled to have that instruction consistent with what his defense is.
Is it your position then that for example, the first element, a specific threat of immediate harm, is it your position that his subjective beliefs inform that?
And Your Honor, I think that we can use his subjective beliefs and his testimony at trial. We don't have to divine what he was thinking. He did testify that he believed she was going to go and drive as she had done previously that day. She left the apartment seriously intoxicated by her own admission and with the keys in the car to her hand. She told him she did not care about him or his stupid job, which would seemingly believe that she was intending to drive. She wouldn't mention the stupid job with the keys in her hand if she was not intending to drive. And Mr. Cruz believed that she was going to go drive drunk, potentially wreck the car and harm herself.
Ms. Cooley, do Mr. Cruz's subjective beliefs inform our analysis of whether his subjective beliefs are a reasonable interpretation of the evidence such that when we determine whether or not there's a reasonable view of the facts that support the instruction?
Yes, Your Honor, if he testified to those beliefs to the jury, if those facts as he understood them were presented to the jury, and in this case he did testify, he testified about his concerns, he testified what he was thinking, and so those are the facts in front of the jury, and a reasonable view of the facts supports this instruction. And the giving of this instruction did not seem to be a real point of contention below, and here on appeal, it appears the state has agreed that this instruction was supported by a reasonable view of the facts. We're simply arguing here that the other three instructions, the other 3 defense, the affirmative defense instructions, covered this. The state has taken the position that the district court was correct in finding that these 3 other instructions were sufficient and such that the necessity defense, though supported by a reasonable view of the facts, did not need to be given.
So a couple more questions, Ms. Cooley. Is it your position that the general necessity instruction should have been given in addition to the specific other affirmative defense instructions, or as an alternative to?
Your Honor, the necessity instruction was the crux of the case here. The concern, the other instructions, you know, self-defense in viewed with the facts of the case, did not really apply here. There was not any testimony by Mr. Cruz regarding this incident that he was feared for his own safety and was in danger of bodily harm.
But so Mr. Cruz asked for the self-defense instruction.
That may be true, Your Honor. But I do think that the necessity instruction was the crux of the defense's case in this instance. And that's supported by, defense counsel's statement, the necessity of defense is vital to our defense, as it is written here in his arguments to the court. Defense counsel focused on the necessity defense and had even pre-planned for this. 2 months before the trial had filed a motion or filed the jury instructions seeking this necessity defense. So while the other instructions may have been helpful or covered in part, I think the necessity defense was the premier and the crux of the defense counsel's case in this instance. Because defense of property, that was one of the instructions given, but it's not as compelling a story to say, I picked her up and put her over my shoulder, I touched her when she did not want to be touched in order to protect my car. The greater harm here and the more compelling argument for the jury was that necessity dictated, necessity being she was about to get in the car and drive drunk. Necessity dictated that he do something after words failed. And it brings up the question of what can a person do to stop a loved one from driving drunk? I don't agree with Mr. Cruz's actions necessarily in this case, but it does bring up a question. And certainly the jurors had experience with that question. I'm sure that they had been involved in situations where a loved one was driving drunk and would have found this necessity to be the most compelling argument. And in this case where the jury was instructed that they are not to consider anything other than the jury instructions, failing to give this instruction was a serious detriment and harm to Mr. Cruz's case.
So I guess I'm not understanding whether Mr. Cruz's argument is that this should have been given in addition to the specific affirmative defenses or as an alternative to. I guess what I'm not understanding, Ms. Cooley, is if those specific, the self-defense and the defense of property, did not accurately reflect the evidence that was presented because he didn't testify as to all the elements for those defenses. It seems then the argument is that this necessity instruction should have been given instead because it more accurately represented his defense.
And your argument, and Your Honor, consistent with what was argued below, we are asking that this necessity be given in addition to these other instructions. And I would like to touch briefly on the sentencing in this case. Mr. Cruz was convicted in this case of a no injury battery, a misdemeanor battery. However, because he had a prior felony, this was elevated to a felony domestic battery. And because he had the persistent violator sentencing enhancement, the court sentenced him to 20 years with 10 years fixed. And the court abused his discretion in this case because Mr. Cruz, this was a no injury battery. And the court failed to focus on the facts of this actual case and instead focused greatly on the character of Mr. Cruz and Mr. Cruz's past. And we would assert that the district court abused its discretion in doing so. And I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal if the court has no further questions at this point.
Thank you, Ms. Cooley. Mr. Jorgensen, a response?
May it please the court. I'd like to start by addressing Judge Husky's question about the testimony and what testimony was given by the defendant about his necessity defense. And I would point out that on page 451 of the transcript at lines 6 through 10, He does include, in addition to the risk to the car, the risk that the victim would injure herself. He did testify about that. However, that was never incorporated into defense counsel's argument. In other words, when defense counsel argued in favor of the necessity defense instruction, defense counsel did not claim that preventing harm to the victim was one of the bases for the requested instruction. And likewise, as counsel, I think, has acknowledged, defense counsel never asked for necessity in lieu of one of the subcategory necessity defenses, such as in lieu of the defense of property instruction. So the issue before this court is ultimately whether the district court erred in deciding that the defense was adequately covered by the given instructions. Now, in retrospect, in hindsight, we know that...
I have one question. Would you agree with Ms. Cooley that the harms, the threat of harm was that Ms. Hume would wreck the car, that Ms. Hume might get in trouble, that Ms. Hume might get a DUI? Would you agree that those were the bases for requesting the necessity instruction?
I think all of those were mentioned, including protecting his own livelihood. So there were some alternatives perhaps suggested in addition to merely protecting the car. But all of that flowed from an accident that damaged the car. All of it flowed from that. In other words, if Mr. Cruz was in fact preventing an accident, then the defense of property instruction covered that because all of the other harms flowed from the accident as well.
Thank you.
So the district court was correct in saying that that because all of the harms flowed from the accident, the defense of property instruction was adequate to contemplate that and to cover that. Even if the district court erred in that, then the error was necessarily harmless because all of these other harms that have been articulated on appeal much better and more roundly than they were presented below, they still flow from the thought of an accident, the idea that there would be an accident. It requires an accident to injure the victim. It requires an accident for him to lose his job, et cetera. So on the harmless error argument,
would flow from an accident. For example, her getting a DUI wouldn't flow necessarily from an accident.
That was the way that it was certainly presented by Mr. Cruz below, was that would be the harm. And then if this court wishes to review the DUI independently, I don't believe that is necessarily before this court, the way it was presented below or on appeal. But if there is some separate defense for DUI, the state would probably argue that merely preventing a DUI citation is not the sort of thing that would give rise to a necessity defense at all. In my reading of the briefs, that wasn't argued. Nobody has claimed that preventing somebody from acquiring a misdemeanor is in fact reasons to commit a misdemeanor against them in terms of a battery. So the idea that he was protecting her from the legal consequences of her action was, I do not believe, presented, nor was it independently adequate. Were it presented below, were it presented on appeal.
Thank you.
Sentencing argument.
Mr. Jorgensen?
Yes.
Before you move on to the sentencing, I have a question. How, if at all, is the first battery that happened inside the home relevant to the claim of necessity as to the second battery outside of the home?
It's not. Is this a sentencing question? Because that seems to relate more to the other.
I said before you moved to the sentence.
Oh, before I move. Okay. Yes. I understand now. Thank you. But yes, I think that we talk mostly about the events outside the home because those are the ones corroborated by an additional witness. But there was quite a bit of evidence that this was an ongoing streak of violence lasting quite a bit of time. And certainly there was nothing presented other than defense of self in relation to the other physical contact that Mr. Cruz admitted happened inside the home, and some of it even on the outside of the home. It was his physical act of grabbing her and bringing her in that was corroborated by the independent witness. So I think that we've been working somewhat, at least, on the assumption that that was the what the jury was ultimately looking at. But that's relevant only to the harmless error argument. As far as what the district court was looking at, the car and the necessity had nothing to do with the events inside the home. That was a straight up self-defense claim. And that's why looking at both of these necessity instructions was appropriate by the district court in saying, first off, any necessity unrelated to the car was covered by self-defense. And it's only the battery outside the home as witnessed by the independent witness where we have any indication that defense of property actually came into play. I don't believe that there's any evidence, and I don't believe there's any argument that he was ever defending property inside the home, for example. And just to touch.
Before you go to the sentencing?
Before, yes.
I want to make sure that I understand the state's argument. The state's position is that if the concerns are that she might wreck the car, get in trouble, or get a DUI, that wrecking the car and or getting in trouble relate to any harm flowing from the vehicle, so the defense of property instruction was adequate. Is that a correct understanding?
Well, not so much the DUI. Because you know she could get a DUI without having an accident, quite clearly. However, the state's argument in relation to the DUI is that was presented neither below or on appeal. The state simply hasn't had an opportunity at either level to argue whether preventing somebody from getting a misdemeanor citation is grounds for a necessity defense to a battery. And because we have been denied that opportunity, I would suggest this court shouldn't address it. If this court chooses to, then I would suggest that preventing somebody from getting a misdemeanor is not grounds to commit a misdemeanor of this sort. So, you know, he was charged and convicted with using force or violence. You get to use force or violence to prevent somebody from getting a ticket for a misdemeanor DUI. And the answer, I believe, is no. You can do that potentially, at least, to prevent harm to property or person, including the victim. But necessity just simply doesn't apply to, I was worried she was going to get cited for a DUI. It just simply doesn't rise to that level that creates a necessity on any level when it's just preventing her from getting a DUI.
But if at trial Cruz testified, my first thought is she's going to wreck the car, she's going to get in trouble and get a DUI. And then when he's asked what his purpose is, when he escorts Cruz into the house, he states, I didn't want her to get hurt. I didn't want the vehicle to get wrecked. I didn't want to lose my job. Right. So if we read all of those together as his concerns, his threat of immediate harm, her getting a DUI is what he articulated was one of his concerns. So why didn't the state have an opportunity to address whether a general necessity instruction would have covered that on appeal?
For two reasons. First off, as he articulated it, it seems to be connected to the accident. Second off, that was never an argument presented below by defense attorney, and it isn't an argument presented on appeal that preventing her from getting a misdemeanor citation for a DUI is sufficient grounds to give the necessity instruction.
So do we have to look at the arguments that counsel made as the basis for the necessity instruction, or Cruz's testimony about what his fears were as the basis for the instruction?
I believe that it's counsel's arguments, because for the court to review the defendant's testimony specifically for grounds unasserted by the defense is beyond the scope of what's required of the court. The court has to rule on the grounds presented by the defense. So when the court says, why should we give this instruction? And the defense says, well, I'm presenting theories A, B, and C. There's no independent duty for the court to analyze theory D. Theory D is unasserted to the court, and the court makes and was not asked to make a ruling on whether necessity applied to preventing a DUI citation. So ultimately, yes, it is counsel's argument that we are looking at in terms of the presentation to the court, because the court ruled on counsel's argument, not an independent review of the evidence.
So if counsel argued to the jury in closing argument that the reason he committed the battery basically is that he didn't want her driving, he didn't want her driving drunk, and he didn't want her destroying his car. Now that's the argument to the jury. That's not the argument to the judge about the basis for the necessity instruction. Why can't we look to that?
Look to it for what, Your Honor? I'm unclear how the closing argument relates to the prior decision in terms of what instructions to give. So the closing argument, counsel did potentially express that sort of concern there, but he didn't express it to the court when the court was ruling on the presentation of the instructions. So ultimately, that issue is not preserved. There just simply hasn't been an argument below or on appeal that preventing a DUI citation, preventing her from getting caught for a DUI and cited for a DUI and potentially going to jail for a DUI, was grounds for the necessity instruction.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jorgensen.
Just briefly on the sentencing issue, counsel has basically argued that it was inappropriate in some way to look at his past history as opposed to the seriousness of the crime. However, district courts get to weigh these sorts of things all the time. Certainly a more minor offense is treated differently by a court if the defendant has a long record and has a history of this sort of crime. And clearly that was what happened in this case. The court was very concerned by Mr. Cruz's history of domestic violence and the need to address that. And that's an entirely appropriate concern of the court. So ultimately, there's been no show of an abuse of discretion. Certainly, given the nature of the crime, ultimately found by the jury, that seems like a sentence that's a little bit farther out than merited by Mr. Cruz's actions in this case alone, as found by the jury. However, the court also could consider the other evidence presented at the trial. It could consider his past record. It could consider all of the other factors that ultimately are not based upon jury findings of guilt and conclude that this crime was far more serious than just the use of force or violence not resulting in an injury. And ultimately, that's all the court did. It was appropriate for the court to do so. No abuse of discretion has been shown. Therefore, the state does request that this court affirm Mr. Cruz's judgment of conviction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jorgensen. Ms. Cooley, any reply?
Just very briefly, Your Honor. I wanted to address Your Honor's question regarding whether the district court should have relied solely on the arguments of counsel for this jury instruction, or whether the court should have also considered Mr. Cruz's statements during his testimony. And it is our position that both of these are important. The court is bound to give a reasonable, based on a reasonable view of the evidence. And the evidence is, while it is Mr. Smothers' argument, it is also the testimony that the court heard at trial. And the court heard prior to this jury instruction conference, Mr. Cruz's asserted concerns, including that Ms. Hume would be hurt, and that it would be it was then appropriate for the court to find that necessity did cover the reasonable view of the evidence. And the court, in fact, didn't find that necessity was unsupported by the evidence. The court just found that there was already some other affirmative defenses in there, and the necessity wasn't absolutely necessary.
Ms. Cooley, the district court didn't specifically say that a reasonable view of the evidence supported the instructions. It actually never ruled on that, right? Because you argue in your briefing that it implicitly had to find that, to find that the other instructions adequately covered the issue.
And Your Honor, the court did not explicitly say that. The court did say that it found, let me see. I think those other three instructions covered the issue and give the defense plenty of room to argue about the defendant's argument who is acting out of necessity or need with respect to the activity that was occurring outside. And so we did argue that it was implied that the necessity was appropriate because the court in this case used the words necessity or need with respect to the conduct that occurred outside. The court did not expressly find so. However, the state did not contest this in its appellate briefing. The state appears to concede that there was a basis for this necessity to instruction, but just argued along the lines of the district court's decision with the three other instructions covering the necessity. Thus, necessity was not harmful.
Thank you.
And if there are no further questions, I would like to this court to vacate the jury verdict as to count two and remand for a new trial.
Thank you, Ms. Cooley. The court appreciates the briefing and argument in this case. The case is now fully submitted and an opinion will issue in due course. The court will be in recess until 10:30.